Hello and welcome to Power the Parent, the podcast. I'm your host, Charlotte Speak. I'm a Level 7 CMI accredited coach, a StrengthsScope master practitioner, mental health first aider, and talent consultant. And I'm also the face behind Power of the Parent. In this podcast, I'll be speaking to parents in the workplace. Some of them are in traditionally employed roles, others are running their own businesses, and we're having conversations about life in general, insights about being a parent and having a career, and exploring the strengths that parenting has awoken for people. We will talk about things like the value that they're bringing to the workplace, as well as my guests very generously sharing their personal stories and anecdotes about everything life can throw at us. I am joined by Andy, who is a teacher. He's also a business owner. He's a dad to three girls, and he's my friend of over 15 years. I really can't wait to chat about how he manages all of those worlds colliding. He's got a lot going on, it's safe to say. And I am really interested and excited to bring Andy's voice into these conversations that I'm having. So we're recording this in March 2021. Schools have been back out of their third. We've just had the third UK lockdown. So you've had a year of teaching that has looked completely different. You have welcomed a lockdown baby. That isn't her name.
We had a shortlist, but yeah, that wasn't on it.
The latest addition to your family was actually peak pandemic.
She was quite early on in when it was serious COVID. When everything was really quite alarming. So before we got all used to all the rules and the regs and the masks became second nature. So it was focused our attention.
Yeah. So I suppose my next question is potentially quite a big one. How are you? And have I summed you up in the intro?
I guess so. It's quite unusual, isn't it, to hear yourself being summed up. I think that's a fair appraisal. I'm still reeling, to be honest, Shah, with the fact that we've known each other for 15 years. When did that disappear? And perhaps that's relevant as well, isn't it, that time marches on at such a lick. 15 years, that's taken me, I'm almost speechless, which is not what we want for a podcast. So I will I'll try and put things into some perspective, but I think that's a fair appraisal.
So the last year has been like all over the place, and mm-hmm. you've been what I would describe as quite a unique position from a parent perspective, because you've experienced it as a parent but also as a teacher. We all, you know, parents that are listening to this, particularly those that have got school-age children, we've had a small insight into what it's like when those worlds collide. How has it been mm-hmm. for you?
Yeah, interesting. And I think to begin with, I'm really mindful that everybody's been on their own journey, and that journey is really, you know, that there's the saying, isn't that we're all in the same storm. But actually, we're all on different boats, and a bit of a cliche to start with, isn't it? But it's really pertinent because everybody's had all sorts to deal with, and some of it's, you know, some of it you just don't know. One of the we've done a lot of remote teaching, and I'm a bit of a self-confessed geek, I guess. So some of the challenges that we've faced, I've kind of relished. You know, it's given me the opportunity and the platform to show off some of the skill sets that I've got with computing, and so it's been great. I've got a role in school. I'm a digital project lead, so I've been responsible for putting together how we've been going to do remote learning, and we've had to go at quite a lick because we weren't perhaps early adopters as a school with some of the digital stuff. So bringing everybody on board and getting that consistency has been the challenge. It's not particularly helpful if you've got one or two members of staff in a school that are, you know, doing green screen tutorials and other people can't log on. So that's been, you know, a bit of a learning curve, trying to bring on board the whole staff. Trying to find the right balance has been the key. just because you can do something doesn't necessarily mean we should have done. And there's been a bit of a lag as well. So I think I'm really mindful that we got going and we were doing really well with our remote learning. And then suddenly we could just see that the engagement dropping off really quickly. And we were starting to have emails from parents saying they're struggling, they can't cope, their work life balance is, you know, not working. The children are getting stressed because they can't finish the amount of tasks. And so we had to kind of respond to that. So it's been a lot of kind of to-ing and fro-ing, listening to our parents, listening to our children. I did some great Zoom calls with my class. I'm teaching year two, so 6 and 7 year olds to begin with. We were having lots of fun. They got used to how using all the mute buttons and that sort of thing. We our digital literacy improved massively, and probably beyond their age expectation, and we were doing a great job. And then suddenly I kind of recognized that they looked jaded, that there wasn't the same sort of spark, and we really needed to ease off. So you've got this real tricky dichotomy, I think is the word, where we want to do the best for the children. We want to keep, you know, offering the learning opportunities, but actually they're not getting the support they might need at home. And how do we strike that balance? Because you might have some children really, you know, chewing through the work and doing a great job, and other children struggling. And, you know, we see this day in, day out in the classroom, but when you're teaching through a letterbox, you don't get to see all the visual cues. You don't get to know what's going on. So it's trying to strike that balance has been the biggest challenge, I think.
Okay. And it's been a huge task, hasn't it? For all the reasons that you've just shared. How is it for you? And do you compartmentalize? Do you see it like one way as a parent, another way as a teacher, or is it just like Andy as a whole, and like how do you separate that?
Mm-hmm. I think teaching is a vocation. I think when I chose to go into teaching, I went in with my eyes wide open. My wife already worked in education. I had some friends working as teachers, so I wanted to move into a sector where there was some scaffolding, some kind of structure to the organization. But also some freedom within that. That was what was important to me, to be able to have some sense of security, but also some freedom. And, you know, teaching does offer that. So it's not a 9-to-5 job. It's certainly not a 9-till-3:30 job. Regularly, I would say daily, I bring work home with me. You're always thinking about how you can improve things. The art of teaching is complex. The more you learn, as a practitioner, I think the more complicated the job gets, because you've got more information at your fingertips. So you think, actually, I know now how I can help that particular child. The challenge is, how do I, you know, shoehorn that into the demands of the curriculum and everything else that's going on in school? So it doesn't get easier. It gets more complicated as time goes on. You've got extra bits and pieces that come with, you know, with your development, you're helping others in school and so on and so forth. So to compartmentalize, I don't know. I think you benefit from having your own children, because you're just more informed. You again just have a little bit more information, although you also get a little bit of guilt, because perhaps you're not doing the role as a parent justice, because you're putting your priorities towards the 30 children in your class.
And so I'm really interested, and I don't think we ever talked about it at the time, and mm-hmm. it was pre me having the girls as well, so I genuinely wouldn't have even had this view on it. But when you did change roles, and when I say that's like an understatement, you completely changed your career. It timed, I think, at a similar time to when your eldest was born. Mm-hmm. Or there, yeah, or thereabouts.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was, yeah.
Did becoming a parent have any part in that? Or like, what was the impact of that happening at a similar time?
Yeah, I don't think it would be fair to say it was the absolute catalyst, but it was certainly a big piece of the jigsaw. I was working, so I'm very I'm not sure anybody's going to be interested in this, but just to give it some context, I did a geography degree because my teacher at high school was great, and he just kind of, you know, lit a spark in me that steered me down a path of geography. So I wanted to go to uni. That's all I kind of knew. I didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I just wanted to go to uni. So my mum and dad had never been to university. We didn't really have a family history of that. So I just wanted to go have some fun and get a qualification that might open up doors. So I ended up doing geography, which you either become a weatherman or a teacher. it's a bit of a random one. I enjoyed it. I had a great time at uni. I didn't really want to be a weatherman. So I actually filled in the application forms a couple of times to be a teacher and never really posted them off. Through various different opportunities in life, I ended up in a sales role. And I loved it. I really enjoyed the job that I had. The company migrated, and I went with like an offshoot, and that meant we were in a much smaller company, but I had a bigger responsibility, and I loved it. And then as Millie, my oldest, she's 8 now, as she came along, you do start looking a little bit further downstream. And I just, the sector of sales that I was working in had a lifespan. It was within the printing industry. And I just felt, you know, this is getting harder and harder. Even in the 5 years that we'd been doing that role, you could tell how much more difficult it was getting. So kind of start looking in, you know, I was looking in 5-10 year chunks and thought, you know, I don't really want to be 40 and having to change jobs. I'm a bit nervous about that. One day we were in the car and we got a text message, and I can still hear the ping of that text message. It's really peculiar. How many messages do you get? And for some reason, this one stood out. We were in the car and we read the message, and a friend of a friend had said that they had a problem. A member of staff had left school. This was in August. How were they going to recruit for September? It was a teaching assistant role. And I said, I think I want to go for this and just see what it's like. Dip my toe in the water. And if I like it, then, you know, see if we can do some sort of PGC. And if not, then I've ruled it out. And I loved it. And sort of not looked back since, really. It's been fantastic.
I think it's amazing. And that, like, immediately, I do remember some of the really early conversations when you'd started, and just how much you've lit up with every conversation that you've ever had about it. And like, of course, it's not perfect, and everybody mm-hmm. has their bad days at work as well, but it's like it was meant for you.
It came at a good time. And I think that all the skills that I'd acquired, I think what's nice about teaching is you can amplify the things that you know you're good at. Of course, you've got to teach, you know, a broad and balanced curriculum, and we try our best to do that, but you can put your own stamp on things. Your classroom is your own private space, really, with the children. And so I'm techie, and so there's, you know, we use lots of technology in my classroom much more than perhaps other classes do. If you're sporty, you know, there's always a bias towards that. If you're really interested in art, that tends to be promoted more within your classroom as well. So schools, I think, have a responsibility to mesh together a range of characters and expertise, so that the children benefit from that as they go through. But everything that I'd kind of learned up to then, I had an interest in photography. All these things that I'd never really had the opportunity to use for a purpose. And I think that's what teaching's given me. It's given me that real sense of purpose. I think, to sum it up, if I had a bad day in the office before I moved, there was nothing to show for it. If I had a good day in the office, I made some money for somebody else. Whereas even if you have a bad day at school, you've made a real difference to somebody. And if you have a good day, then all the better. So I think for me, that sense of fulfillment's the thing that, you know, is the takeaway.
Oh, that's amazing. That's so lovely and incredibly inspiring as well. One of the things that I think is just always on my mind or very conscious of, particularly in the line of work that I'm in, is teaching doesn't get an amazing rep for supporting parents sometimes. And a lot of mums in particular that I've worked with over the last year are like, it's just the overwhelm of going back and not, I suppose some of the stuff that you talked about before about that kind of division of attention of you want to give everything to your class and then how much energy is left at the end of the day and that side of things. How do you approach that and look after yourself, I suppose?
Probably not very well. I do tend to put other things first, but that's not a completely charitable act. I think, you know, if you do something that you enjoy, you're getting something from that. Mm. You know, if I hated it, I wouldn't do it, so I would move on. So I don't think you can have your cake and eat it, can you? You know, yes, it, you know, if you want to contribute extra time and be the best you can in something, and if you want to, you know, have success, you've got to put a little bit extra in. You can't then complain about having to do that. There are things in that. I tell you what, I hate having to do things that have got no impact, and you think this is just a purely administrative task that's going to have no benefit to anybody. Mm-hmm. That's the hardest thing, when you're doing something you think, what on earth, I still don't know how well I handle that, because I tend to wear my heart on my sleeve and people tend to know when I'm doing something that, you know, that I don't really want to do.
Yeah, I think that's totally understandable. And that whole conversation around knowing where you're adding value and self-worth and all of that stuff is paramount, isn't it? And I think over the last year, we've all had to have a really good look at how we work and how we operate and what we're bringing to the workplace. And it's taken a completely different route for some of the conversations for parents in the workplace.
Yeah. I mean, for me, in some respects, lockdown, I don't know how popular an opinion this is, but it was quite timely. We, you know, my wife was pregnant with our third child. We hadn't tidied the house properly for I don't know how long. And the car seats were, you know, probably about to start a second pandemic. So it gave us that opportunity to just take stock. Mm. To begin with, you know, that first lockdown where the weather was good and the expectations on the children weren't as high. And actually it gave us a chance as a family just to, you know, spend some great time together. You know, we did the walks that everybody did and that daily exercise, we went out and it was great to actually just spend a bit of time together. Lockdown, what do we call it? Lockdown 3.0. obviously there was a much greater weighting on work for me. I've been, you know, really busy with this, you know, the discipline of school, but because I was working remotely, we split up in the year group. My colleague is in a small flat. She's on her own. She was quite happy to go into school and look after the key workers, most of which were in her class already. So it worked really well for us. Mm. And with my ICT, you know, computing side, it lent itself for me to do the remote stuff. But because I was out of the firing line in school, I could just concentrate on what I needed to do, and that was delivering teaching and learning to the children. The platform that we used was brilliant because I could be in 30 places or 60 places at once. So I could give personalized feedback to each and every child. They did a piece of work. It appeared on my laptop. I could give voice notes. I could give, I could mark it and send it straight back to them. So even in the classroom, you know, as much as you want to, you know, give personalized feedback, time's the enemy, and you don't really have, you know, you can get to some children and the next child you clock later on, and you think, okay, we'll go, you know, work on that afterwards. Actually, what I was able to do is give personalized feedback to everybody. Mm-hmm. However, that comes with a health warning, because I set a piece of work and it comes back 30 times. I set two pieces of work, it comes back 60 times. So you see where I'm going with this. It, yeah. Actually, in the end, you drown in the responses that were coming back from the children. Mm. So you had to be careful with, you know, managing that.
Mm. At the end of every couple of weeks, well, at the end of every week, we used to get a, well, we still do actually now they're back, but we used to get an update from school, and very often they would put in the figures of how many pieces of work or how many entries onto Tapestry or Seesaw had been put on and how many teacher comments had come back. And the numbers were just astounding. And yeah. I know a lot of the teachers at our school are also parents, and you thought, like, well, you don't know if anybody's in a put their children in a key worker bubble, so you don't want to assume that that's happened. And even if they have, you've still got evenings to get through when you've been teaching completely differently. And even those of us like yourself who are incredible at the IT side of things, it's still a screen to be staring at for a long time, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. So you've got all the stamina with that, but also it's a role that there was zero training that came from anybody about this. So, you know, we made some decisions, some good decisions, some bad decisions, but they had to be made then and there. I had to, you know, put a case forward for, we used Seesaw, you mentioned before, you know, I had to go to our head and make a case for it, because if I hadn't, we wouldn't have had it. So it was happening, you know, in real time with everything else that was going on. So yeah, it was a bit mad, really. But then once we got established, we had, I think we've had over, you know, 47,000 pieces of work that have come through in lockdown 3.0 in the school. That's insane. And some of the children have flourished. Some of the children have done an amazing job. Other children haven't. And, you know, now we're back into school a couple of weeks in. We're starting to take stock and decide, you know, what do we do now? How do we plug those gaps and move forward?
I genuinely, and I say this with as much feeling and compassion as I can possibly put into it, genuinely, teachers and nursery practitioners as well, real life superheroes. Like, I know that that's a really big badge to wear, but to me, like 100%, I just think the resilience, we've all had to show resilience over the last year, and it has been incredible. I saw quite early, I think it was the beginning of January actually, unfortunately a school near us had got some really bad press because the teachers had, you'll probably know this better than me, something like invoking their right to not teach. And it wasn't that, but it was their safety base. It was on the 3rd of January.
Yeah. So the timing, to give a bit of background to that, for the media, it's such an easy target to attack teachers, and the government doesn't particularly like teachers either. There is, you know, they're a big organization that doesn't get a huge amount of support. And there's not many teachers that are in it just, you know, I don't know whether I can say this, you'll have to bleep it out, but tossing it off. Like it's people are working really hard, like they are in all sorts of industries. You know, teachers aren't the only people that are working hard, but there's not many teachers that aren't. You know, they do their very best. Sometimes it's not good enough. And I think most people would take that on the chin, but generally I would say most teachers are doing their best, and the best is pretty good most of the time. Mm. I think with the lockdown thing and the strike, it was a really difficult situation, because people genuinely, you love the children in your class. You want to do the very best for them. And part of that is keeping them safe. You know, you go on a school trip and you do a lot of head counting, because you priority to make sure that the children are safe and you've got everybody there. And that, you know, is the same in the classroom. Yet, you know, the couple of days before we came back after Christmas, all that everybody could see over the media was skyrocketing, you know, COVID cases. It was only going in one direction. It was getting worse and worse. The rest of the country was being told to lock down. You know, don't go into the shops if you can't. And if you do, you need to, you know, follow all the protocols. And at the same time, we were being asked to be in a small room with 30 children without a mask. Now, anybody that has got children, and you know how quickly head lice and everything else spreads in a small classroom. It just didn't match up, and it was a really difficult thing. Everybody that I spoke to was saying the timing of this is terrible. This could have been done 2 weeks earlier, and actually, people were put in a really difficult situation where they were balloted, and I hate sort of. Cringe with all this the sort of the union stuff, to be honest. It doesn't fit with me, but you have to respect that, you know, people are trying to do the right thing, but I don't really like it. I kind of feel a bit awkward with it all. But I also felt worried about, you know, I was involved in a governor's meeting, and I said, you know, would anybody here choose to go into a small, you know, would you go into Greg's and spend 6 hours in there without a mask with a group of people? And they looked at me as if like, no way. It was precarious.
Absolutely. It was frustrating watching as a parent, and just, you know, people saying the NHS aren't striking, the NHS are carrying on. I'm like, you can't compare the two worlds. That's completely different.
Yeah. And they're incredible what they're doing. And, you know, I can't imagine some of the horrors that some people have seen, but they also had all the best kit, I guess, that could have been provided at that time for them. And they weren't asked to go into those, you know, rooms without anything. It was just so difficult for everybody. And I think going back to what I said before, you know, everyone's been on their own journey, and the challenges that they face, you know, are pertinent to them. Let's hope we never have to face it again.
I hope so. Certainly hope so.
I would say, just in case we go on a different path, something that pops into my head is that the real heroes, I think, are the children. Coming back, talk about resilience. Yeah, of course, we've got some gaps to plug, but you know, all the scaremongering about, you know, falling behind, everybody is in a similar sort of place. So if your children were in the top of the class, they kind of still are. If they were in the bottom of the class, they probably still are. And most children are somewhere in the middle and have the strengths and weaknesses, and they still are. And it has really felt in the last 2 weeks, business as usual. The one thing that's now starting to creep up more and more is, I think, vocabulary. And vocabulary is one of the biggest keys to success in education. And so I'm going to make a big plea to all your listeners. If anything you can do is just to keep expanding on the vocabulary, sit around the table, talk to your children, because we're finding that, you know, children have such a narrow range of vocabulary at the moment. That is tangible, because they're not going to the zoo. So we've had children talking about, you know, playing with animals, but they don't know the name for the zoo. Mm. Not been to a zoo. And they haven't been, you know, they don't know what a birthday party feels like if you're under 4 or 5, because, you know, that memory's kind of vanished. So we need to work hard as a community to just to give them that vocabulary, because that's key.
That's noted. I'm off to go and speak to my girls immediately. I think that's a really powerful thing to remind us that we can so easily do, or it sounds easy to do, but huge in impact.
Yeah. So here's my fact that you can take away.
I love a fact.
This is a good fact. So 30 million is the fact. Well, 30 million is the number. 30 million is the difference in the amount of words that a child will have heard from a word rich and a word poor family by the time they start school. So if you're the family that's sitting around the table and they're chatting and you're engaging with your children and you're doing the sort of, you know, all the good things, your child's potentially going to hear 30 million more words than a child that's plugged in and they don't get that interaction. 30 million. So not necessarily 30 million new words, but 30 million. And what comes with that is that ability to turn take, that inference, that ability to scaffold and to predict, and everything that learning kind of centers around in English schools. What a difference. You don't close that gap. To close that gap, you've got to acquire something like 15 new words a day on top against your peers to try and like make any sort of difference. So yeah,
that's just blowing my mind. Yeah. Talk to your kids, people. So at the end of all of my podcast episodes, I am asking my guests three questions. we started to touch on this a little bit, but the first one is, what does self-care look like for you?
I think when you pause to answer a question, that's not a good, it's not a good sign, is it? I think I don't think about it a lot. So to think about it now, I guess it looks different at different times in your career and in your life. So self-care at the moment is spending a bit of time with the family. It was going swimming once a week with the family. That was pretty cool. And we got into a good habit with that. And we missed that. It's stealing a little bit of time to watch a film occasionally or a footy match. I guess self-care is it's trying to pinch the almonds and a glass of wine.
Next one is, if you could go back and give a piece of reassurance to the Andy who was becoming a parent for the first time, what would that piece of reassurance be?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know about being a parent. I can answer it for being a person.
Yeah, go for it.
I find it difficult to not care. So, you know, someone says something and you take it on board and it hurts you sometimes. So I heard the other day that the 5-minute rule, and if it's not going to affect you in 5 years' time, don't spend more than 5 minutes on worrying about it. And I'm trying to stick to that at the moment.
Yeah, I love that. I love that advice. And just, yeah, feedback. We can choose to do what we want with feedback, can't we? It's not always the gift that some people make out.
You hear all these, you know, all these quotes, and, you know, I'm sure in your arena, you're well aware of a lot of them. And to be honest, a lot of them, you kind of, as a layperson, I guess, I hear them and think, oh yeah, I agree with that. And it's in one ear and out the other. But that one stuck a little bit actually for me just at that moment. So yeah, just try and care a little bit less about the things that shouldn't matter.
And finally, what are your hopes for parents in the workplace? I was going to say in the future, but the future's now, isn't it? So for how we are working at the moment for parents, what are your hopes?
I think the world's got itself in a little bit of a mess, haven't we, at the moment? And, you know, we think about all the discussion centering around race, the centering around gender and the impact of men on women and everything that's, you know, really, really current in the media at the moment. I think we've just got to start looking after each other, haven't we? Everybody just needs to have a bit more respect. I don't know what the answer is, but it's tricky, isn't it? But just because we're so connected with Twitter and everything else now, but then we're also isolated as well, and we just need to find a way to have a bit more respect towards each other.
Love that. Thank you so much for the chat. We haven't, you know, we haven't sat down and spoken properly. Well, probably since, you know, the kids actually have been born, because
I know you're busy too. And
there's lots of half conversations that are still hanging in the air, I'm sure. But, you know, we'll get back to it one day. It has been an absolute pleasure to catch up. And thank you so much for sharing your experience of the last year and what it has been like to be a parent and a teacher in a global pandemic. Let's hope that you never have to report back on that again.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Thank you, Kat.
I'm becoming a new parent as well.
And now we've not even mentioned the baby. She's good. We love her to pieces.
Thank you, Andy. Thanks very much for tuning in to Power of the Parent, the podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please rate, review and subscribe. And if you could tell all your friends about the podcast, that would be wonderful. If you'd like to get in touch, you can find me on Instagram. Just search Power of the Parent. See you next time.